Hello, and welcome to Enemies of Good Art on Resonance 104.4 FM. You're about to hear one of a series of 9 discussions about art practice and family commitment. This week's show looks at the involvement of children as the subjects and the makers of contemporary art. The discussion is called Delight and Liberty, the Simple Creed of Childhood. It's a small fragment of a verse from a poem by William Wordsworth. I chose it because this snippet captures some of the ideals that adults have of that early period of life. Today I'm joined by 4 artists who involve children in their art practice or make work about children and childhood. Wendy Ewald, she's an acclaimed visual artist and educator. She's worked with different communities around the world to produce art that expresses the dreams, fears and fantasies of children. She gives the camera over to her subjects, the children, and they produce the images. Her methods might sound a bit familiar now, but she's a pioneer in this field and has been collaborating with children in this way for the last 40 years. Also in the studio with me is Gideon Mandel. He's an award-winning photographer and activist who has documented social issues in Africa, especially HIV and AIDS. One of his latest projects is called 3 Eyes On. It's dedicated to finding innovative ways of working with young people from deprived communities in the UK to photograph life, their lives. He's setting this up with fellow photographer Crispin Hughes. My third guest is Alicia Hart. She's a visual artist and photographer who graduated from the Royal College of Art in 2009. During this time, she and her daughter photographed each other and created a body of work exploring the everyday. She's a regular contributor to Wallpaper and Nowness and has been awarded the Renaissance Photography Prize and the Julia Margaret Cameron Award this year. And my final guest is Ian Dawson, an artist and sculptor. His practice is mainly materials driven. Whether using plastic items from a pound shop or salvaged steel, he reconfigures existing materials into new fantastical and brightly coloured assemblages. His work can be characterized by a destructive playfulness, he says. He's currently writing a book called Making Contemporary Sculpture. It will explore how art is made and will be published in 2012. Hello and welcome. And to introduce myself, my name is Anna Shorter, and I'm part of the group Enemies of Good Art. Ian, if I could start with you. Can I ask you to describe how you involve children in your practice?
I guess it started when my daughter was old enough to come to the studio, and when she came to the studio, it became quite a magical environment. Due to the sort of nature of making work with materials and being material-based sort of inquiries, it seemed to make sense that when Ava started to come to the studio, she just reinvigorated certain aspects of my practice. I guess play per se is this thing which is best when it's not motive driven, when it's sort of motiveless. And I have the opinion that creativity is sort of housed within that sort of moment where there's no sort of defined outcomes. And Ava kind of really helped rediscovered those moments in the studio for me. I guess that's was a key moment when I sort of recognised that there was a two-way sort of play between myself and my daughter with regards to sort of my practice.
So up until then, you hadn't really involved your daughter in your practice.
I guess it was about 2.5 because the studio is sort of a bit of a dodgy place. So you can't have her eating sort of resins and things like that. There was that, but once verbal communication was there, you could sort of say, kind of don't do a few things, but it became a yes zone. I sort of always thought about that as being a really key thing,
as opposed to the no zone, which is where,
which is home, with like kind of not sticking DVDs in the freezer or not putting sort of sweets in the DVD player. So there was a kind of place where you could sort of like say, yeah, you know, you can do things. And certainly my practice is kind of to do with dismantling and reconfiguring things. And so it's kind of, it was a perfect place to, and they do it so differently to you. Mm. It was kind of wow. It's always, there's a lot of wow. Providing you say yes to having an open sort of environment.
Wendy, are you there?
Yep, I'm here.
I mean, you've always worked with children within your practice from day one. Is that right? And can you kind of describe how, I guess, how you collaborate with them and with the projects that you do and how they work, I guess?
Yeah, I mean, I actually started the same time I learned how to make pictures when I was, 17, almost right away. I started working with kids to make photographs or giving Polaroid cameras to them. And I think it was just, for me, it was a natural thing because I did projects with my brothers and sisters growing up. And so I was in, I had a summer job of going to work on a native, in a native community in Canada. And I just thought, well, I'm going to get cameras and bring them. And that was sort of the beginning of the time when Polaroid gave teachers and artists cameras and film. And so for me, I understood that you were talking about that zone.
What zone is that?
The creative zone that the kids are able to do things really in a way that you as an artist you have a very different position, I guess, vis-a-vis the material and what you want. Even at 17, I was very serious about what I was doing, and I saw that the way that the kids could work in their own community with the camera was much more free, and much more came out of their own emotions and relation to the place than obviously I could as an outsider and as someone who thought about how to compose pictures in a more traditional kind of way.
If I could just bring in Gideon on this idea. I mean, you've not always involved children in your practice as far as...
Yes, I mean, I've had a very long, I suppose, 26-year career as a photojournalist, as a photographer. I mean, a lot of the work I've done, many times I have photographed children and children have been my subjects. But, I mean, over the last 10 years or so, with a variety of different subjects, I've been trying different ways to bring in the voices of my subjects. Working a lot with HIV-positive people, often involving issues around mother-to-child transmission and children. I've, both with, recording people's voices and moving more into using video and multimedia, the voices of my subjects have been very important.
Do you recognize this zone that Wendy was describing?
Well, what I'm discovering, and it's been a pretty recent discovery in the last couple of years, is just the immense openness and free in this era where photography has become quite jaded, and in many ways photography and photojournalism and documentary photography feels very tired. There's something incredibly invigorating about bringing, bringing naive eyes who haven't photographed before, who aren't trying to be photographers, who are not trying to be artists. But if one can sort of motivate people to go out there and explore their lives and show us their world, I've just been amazed by what one can see and the kind of, I mean, I think, in terms of my own journey, my kind of initial major project working with kids was a project which I did in a community called the Kingsmead Estate in London, which is a very poor, a bit like a housing project in the state, where there was a school on the estate, and I worked with the school, and I was photographing as well as the kids, and I saw it at the time as, working in partnership and in parallel. So I was working as a documentary photographer, photographing in the estate. And we also did a project, myself and Crispin, we did a project with one class. And we developed, I suppose, a technique of working with an entire class. And it was interesting because part of the deal with the school was we'd do an exhibition of the class where every single child had to have a picture in the exhibition. So we had to make sure that it was totally inclusive. And what's the when we eventually did the exhibition at the Museum of Childhood in London, there was the wall with the kids' work, and I made a video with the kids' work, and there was the wall with my work. And I was just blown out of the water by the kids. I mean, the kids' work was essentially so much more interesting than the work I was producing as a photographer. I mean, mine was possibly more technically assured and more accomplished. But what the kids were showing us, what were showing people, I mean, and the audience response was the same. You know, I'd walk into the gallery and I'd see this thick line of people looking at the kids' work and hardly anyone paying any attention to my work. And that was very, very illuminating.
I want to return to this idea of working with children or people who aren't trying to be artists or trying to be photographers when they take a picture. But I just wanted to bring in Alicia. Alicia, I mean, tell me how why your practice went through quite a shift after you had a family and had a child. Tell me about that.
Well, I worked as a picture editor for 13 years, and I suppose
you've been to university and studied.
I'd studied photography, and I went into an industry where obviously I was just bombarded with images. And I worked as a picture editor for the Sunday Telegraph magazine and various other publications. And when I had Mia, I just found that I had time to stop. That it was a very busy occupation, and the amount of images that I had to process each day was, I was totally bombarded. So I suppose when I stopped, I started to look around at my world. And the interesting thing that evolved was with me and Mia and our relationship with the camera that started very early on, because I would photograph her and she would be curious. I think she started taking photos when she was about 9 months, when she could physically hold. I had a Yashica, which is a very durable camera that you could literally just throw across the room and it wouldn't shatter. So, and I just gave it to her, and I'm sure most people thought I was mad. But I was just really intrigued that she didn't know what she was photographing. And then it was a way of us learning, her learning words or language as well. So she would point at photographs and sort of name what she saw in the picture. And it was a really interesting interactive interaction between mother and daughter, that she would obviously communicate through photographs before she could really speak. So that's when and then of course she started photographing me, and we would both play for the camera, and it was a game. And I created a book out of that, which merged both images, which I really enjoyed doing. And the work evolved to the fact she started making objects, and then I started photographing them objects and using scale. And when I was really started making work for children, so the work evolved and is still evolving with her how she develops verbally and visually.
The sort of link with literacy and learning, learning words in Mia's case, and getting to grips with words and ideas and concepts. I mean, that's something that you do, Wendy, through your program. Can you tell me how that kind of works?
That's something I developed over years, and it was really a way in the beginning to have kids write about the things that they wanted to photograph so that they could focus and before they would go out and shoot. And also to think about the ways in which they wanted to use the camera in situations and planning, and just sort of slowing down to think and use the camera in a conscious kind of way. And then I saw that, if I really wanted to work in schools, which was sort of a natural place where kids were anyway, and to influence that environment, then I had to figure out a way of selling it to the schools. And everybody was always concerned with the kids not being able to write or not liking to write. So then I linked photographic assignments with writing assignments. So that there are, I mean, basically it's the idea of starting with the child, him or herself, and then moving out to the family, to the community, and then to dreams or fantasies for their futures, and having them write before they shoot, then shoot, and then come back and write from images. But basically, that having an image, it's just very similar to what you're saying about your daughter, that that using an image then to write from or talk from or whatever is something that is very fruitful, and especially for kids who have trouble communicating or writing.
And these images that actually come out from the workshops that you do, this process that you have with these children, I mean, some of them, they're very astonishing.
We work for a long time also about the, you know, what are the essential ideas of photography? Like the frame being the first, and time, and vantage point, and so they learn to use the tool very well, and then their subject matter as children is as we were saying, very creative or primal, or particularly, I worked with a lot of kids who lived in rural areas, their canvas was very, very varied and evocative.
Give us an idea of some of the images that have stayed with you. You've done, you've worked with so many children and people over your very long career.
Well, I guess the images I remember most or think about most are ones taken by children in Kentucky in the late 70s, early 80s, or in Chiapas in Mexico much later. But they both had a sort of sense of play and kind of danger and violence to them, which I think is pretty, now as a mother I understand it's pretty natural for childhood fascination. But and right now I'm going back and seeing people in their 40s and talking to them about those images they made when they were kids. But one of them, for example, is two boys in Kentucky had a fight because they had swapped hunting knives, because all those kids hunted, and they each thought the other one had gypped them in some kind of way. And so they weren't talking to each other. And one of them had a dream that he killed the other one. So he asked his friend to pose, to recreate this dream, which is the boy is in between the forks of a tree with his arms out. I mean, it's very, looks like he's been crucified.
And he is playing dead in that image, yeah, as well.
Yeah. And then you know, of course, in the making of the image, you know, the two boys made up, but it's a very evocative image. And in Mexico, some of the masks that the kids made just out of the backs of cracker boxes to become devils and be in trees, and are just, they're astonishingly beautiful. So this idea of photographing their interior life, I think, led to a lot of really amazing photographs.
Wendy, can I say that my friend Crispin Hughes and I, who we work with on our children's projects, we've both been inspired and motivated and driven by your work and by your books. I mean, in this era when community and collaborative photography has so often become a cliche and there's so much of it around, you know, we've really felt it's important to go back to the beginnings and go back to the source. And we've been, I mean, I'd say our whole practice is pretty much inspired by you. And so I feel pretty daunted being on a program in your presence. But I mean, what I think is interesting, so back to you talking about words, something which we've found has worked really well as part of our practice is at the end of the workshop, each child leaves with their chosen signature picture, their one signature picture. And of course, in this digital age, they can take loads of images, but they'll have their few best pictures, but their one signature picture. And what you've suggested to the schools, and what's worked really well, is they've then worked with a poet. A poet has come in and workshopped, and they've each done a poem response to that picture. And then, I mean, in my most recent project in Gateshead, Newcastle, I then made a film with that work, which where we used their poems, with them reciting their poems, and working with that as a kind of amazing resource of poems and photographs.
Now, with
working together
with what you do and actually having a child involved with making the work, I mean, does it ever, I don't know, raise eyebrows, raise questions? Is the work that comes out, say, for instance, out of your workshops and other workshops like this, they're art, but does everyone see it that way?
Well,
you want to answer?
I don't know.
I'd say when you answer.
Well, it raises eyebrows. It raises all kinds of eyebrows. Whether it's art, whose is it? Are you taking advantage?
What I like about your work, Wendy, is that you reposition yourself quite strongly as you are the artist, very much. I think people have come to see you as the artist who's inspiring the work, but in a way it is very much your work, isn't it?
Well, yeah, I mean, I think that took me a while to understand, actually. And then in the beginning I sort of had two streams running, one I was shooting and one they were shooting. And then I began to sort of think about it and realize that, what I was bringing to, what they were bringing, what I was bringing to each of those streams was art, really, and that it wasn't useful to, I mean, whatever situation we go into to work with kids, we influence them. I mean, they wouldn't be doing it, and the way that we set it up is very much has to do with our aesthetic. And even if we're trying to be as open as we can, that has to do with our aesthetic. So eventually I felt more comfortable with that, and the more transparent I felt I could be, the better the work would be.
And Ian, can I bring you in at this point, because you work with children, not only your own, in terms of making your sculptures. I mean, can you do you identify with some of the things Gideon and Wendy have been saying?
Without a doubt, yeah. And I think it was obviously an issue that Deborah Curtis and Gavin Turk sort of...
That's House of Fairy Tales.
That when they set up House of Fairy Tales, it was to deal with the schism between the authored works, that going to a gallery and then having a family that... and wanting to sort of like kind of deal with the two things.
I mean, how are they dealing then with the two things? And can you just describe?
The House of Fairy Tales is like a travelling circus of a variety of performers, artists who put on kind of workshops of a variety of levels. It deals with storytelling, narratives, and it what's nice about it has a meta level of understanding. So you have storytelling about childhood things, but then obviously other levels of readings that kind of obviously brings about. But I think what's key to all of it is its improvisational nature, where the majority of the workshops kind of have improvisation at the heart.
I mean, is that the improvisational nature and the sort of spontaneity of I don't know, I guess working with materials, seeing what they do, seeing what happens if you do this or that. I mean, is that very important for your practice?
Oh, it's key. It's absolutely key, and I guess that's why kind of I'm here.
So, I mean, Alicia, can I bring you in at this point? I mean, when you were making... images with your child, you faced the question on a number of occasions, do you exhibit them or not? You were taking photographs of your child in her everyday life. She was taking photographs of you. Can you just explain what was going on at that time and your dilemma?
I explore my dilemma. I try to research it. I try to write about it.
What is the dilemma?
Certain images that I've taken of Mia have been with her father, and she is semi-naked in the images, and so is he. And within my time at the Royal College, I wrote my dissertation about my naked child, and sort of the complexities of those images, and also the fact that obviously I'm documenting a loving moment, and then if they were to be out in the public, then other suggestions would be put on those images.
So some sort of misinterpretation.
Yes. So it sort of takes away the moment, or it just takes away the power of obviously photographing or trying to sum up something quite magical, but certainly between a daughter and a father, because I think they have such a bond, and it just seems such a shame, obviously, that putting a man and a child together just naked equates something else.
But I mean, where does that come from culturally? Where do you think? Why the fear of exhibiting images like that?
I think it's just the fear of course, as a mother, you want to protect your family. And the same as you said, you wouldn't take your daughter to the studio because you felt it wasn't quite safe for her. And
but
for
that's,
me,
that's different now, though.
That's different now. But for me, I wouldn't want her to take her to a place of exposure that isn't safe for her.
I mean, are there issues for you around exhibiting her work when she doesn't quite understand what it's before she...
I've never exhibited her work, actually. I've exhibited a model that she's made, which I've then photographed. As in the work that was in a book, it was kind of a project that was sort of made together. But it didn't really go anywhere else. There is one particular image that I sold for the Renaissance Photography Prize, which is an image of Mia's back, which she's semi-naked in. And I did limit the edition to one, and then there was two women that had breast cancer that asked if they could buy it, and I agreed because I had met them. But it is really hard to let go of your work, especially when it's your own child.
Yeah.
Sorry, yeah. You go.
I mean, I suppose just sometimes, you know, with two of the projects I've worked in, we've done exhibitions. You know, the Kingsmead Eyes project was exhibited at the V&A Museum of Childhood, and just recently, the work I did in Belsham and Gateshead was shown in Newcastle as part of the Jews Festival. And just last week, I was up there for the exhibition opening, and I just love seeing the kids at the exhibition. The kick they get out of suddenly realizing that the work they did is being appreciated by a broader public. And, you know, seeing them next to their picture and having people come. But, you know, in both situations, their poem and their photograph has been exhibited there. And although they never really had a vision of what that was going to be, you know, I've, you know, myself and Crispin have conceived of the exhibition and put that whole thing together. But I think it's given the kids a huge amount and quite a lot of confidence and quite a big kick to see the work in that context. And what I like most about it as well is something. Some of the kids are really weak academically, kids who have got low confidence, have had low confidence in terms of the normal mathematics and English and written skills, have done really well in the photography and have done amazing images. And just to get, for them to be kind of acclaimed and seeing that, you know, the kid who's done, you know, a really great picture is a lot. So, I mean, I think there's a lot of good which can come out of kids showing their work and a lot of affirmation they can get. And they can show the world something really interesting.
But Wendy, I mean, when you've done a number of exhibitions with showing your work alongside the collaborative projects with children and pieces that the children have made on their own, and these images have been included in beautiful books about the projects that you've done. Have you had a lot of interest from galleries and museums in the body of work and sort of in acquiring the work to sort of build up an archive of this and these sort of hopes, dreams, fears of these artists that you're working with?
It's a very complex kind of subject, and I think at a certain point, I began to feel that I was interested in having this, well, I was interested, but also other people were interested in having things in galleries or museums. And I, at first I felt very sort of awkward about it. And then I began to think more about it and the idea of, you know, what, especially museums, you know, what is a museum essentially for, to keep things that, that we will be able to see years and years from now. And also it assigns value, obviously, to the work. And I don't mean monetary value, but cultural value. And so I became very interested in the idea of having this work saved. And at first, people, museums would say, okay, well, we'll buy some of your photographs. And I would say, well, you know, what about, you know, the children's photographs, or what about a combination of them? And that was a really, it was a difficult border for people to cross. And I had an exhibition at, it was the Mexican kids' work at the Center for Creative Photography in Tucson. And it was a big show. And then in the back room, they had a smaller show that was what work they had from Mexico in their permanent collection, you know, by different photographers. And I must say that some of the kids' photographs were as definitely held up to the permanent collection. And I said, well, so how about buying a few of these for your permanent collection? And the curator said, but what would I do? You know, whose name would I put them under? What, you know, how would I catalog them? And that seemed like so strange to me. And in the end, they never did buy any of the pictures.
And this sort of idea to cross that you mentioned, has it been crossed? Has there been interest in museums in actually buying the pictures?
Slowly. I mean, there have been lots of museum exhibitions, big museum exhibitions with the work in it. But the idea of buying it is another step.
Well, why do you think that is?
Well, I think that that especially in photography, sometimes I think that people have a stake in, you know, the profession has a stake in keeping it purely for artists.
Alicia, you can't see this, but I've got two nodding people. I've got Alicia and Ian both nodding in the studio. Ian.
That's good. And I don't know. I mean, sometimes I think it goes back to, you know, the precariousness of photography and the ease at which you can make photographs. And, of course, that's becoming increasing more and more. And so rather than embracing that, you know, there seems to be a kind of, sense of insecurity.
So, Ian, what were you saying?
It's still based on questions of authorship, isn't it, I guess? And wanted to maintain high prices with regards to the production of art for museums. So it's going to take a long time for this to kind of turn around. But this is only a recent model. Galleries exist in this way, servicing museums for the last 50, 60, 70, 80 years. I'm not sure, but it's only within this century that it's been this way. So, and you know, it's not going to be like this forever. So we can see the way that the more community-based activities could well start to return. If the stock market stops functioning the way it does, if certain other characteristics work the way they do, we have resource issues, it could well mean that our view of how kind of art production and what it means is going to alter significantly along with those things.
So where do you see this model heading then?
I'm not about to sort of project in that sense, other than to think of the way it's changed kind of significantly through every period, and it's just going to mirror kind of the differences thing with regards to, like I said, yeah, resource issues and things like that.
I think also with photography, one thing that maybe all of us who deal with photography come against is that when you take an image of someone and someone else is looking at it, they see the person, they don't see the image. So I think that that's something that I definitely find complex within my work, is they identify not with the image but with the person in the image. And I don't know if you've had the same experience.
Definitely, and I think often it depends very much of the on the context that it's seen and shown, and you know, where the way images work and the way they're meant to work. I mean, Wendy, I mean, I'm going to put this question to you because it's an issue which is troubling me as well in kind of starting to think about working with kids, is when one starts to think about the photograph and the print as a physical commodity that's bought and sold and traded. Mm. I mean, with your work with kids, I mean, who owns that? Who is the owner of the commodity? And if...
Oh, is it a commodity?
Yeah, is it a commodity? I mean, and if it exists as a physical print that someone chooses to put on their wall, who is the owner?
Yeah. I mean, what I have done is to make arrangements. I mean, this has evolved over many years, but to make arrangements with the group that I'm working with, that if something is sold, then a certain percentage goes to that group, and a certain percentage to the gallery, and a certain percentage to me. And you know, out of what I get, I you know, produce the print. And in certain cases, in North Carolina, for example, where I've done many projects and probably have sold more work from there, the money goes to a fund that teachers administrate to give grants to other teachers who want to do photographic projects. And in some cases, where the institution might not need money, like in the girls' boarding school that I worked in, the part of the piece then is the girls deciding where they would like money to go. So I try to involve it in the making of the work and be as much as I can and talk about it from the beginning, but that wasn't always the case.
I want to talk about some of the themes and ideas that come out of. Oh, hello! Gosh, we've lost something. Oh no, it's just my dodgy headphones. I want to talk a little bit about some of the themes and ideas that come out through this involvement of children in your practice. I mean, Ian, how does it? You talked about this sort of spontaneity, this sort of playfulness, combining things that you don't expect to be combined together.
That's right. I mean, maybe another aspect of it is that obviously it's my use of colour, and this actually kind of precedes having children to this extent, whereby my work was always kind of intensely colourful. So when it went to the galleries, there would be a kind of an incredible response from children who kind of were seeing the work. And it was only when I kind of read this excellent book by David Batchelor called Chromophobia, the full kind of subject of kind of colour came out, whereby in Batchelor's book, he describes drawing as being the intellectual side, the male side, whereas colour becomes the, in art history, colour becomes the superficial side, the feminine side, the infantile side. And also within colour kind of becomes this thing where it's a cosmetic layer that sort of that is there to hide and conceal the true sort of image. So you have that kind of thing where colour is through art history becomes this secondary notion and not a primary notion. And so because my work was based kind of completely in sort of coloured items, highly coloured items, say from the 99 pence store, that were there to kind of really have an instant response. I don't know where I'm going with this per se, but to say that kind of it that as a subject, and then having children kind of meant that I had a kind of excellent time dealing with it, or it confirmed sort of notions of this thing that I was wanting to deal with the work, because it was interesting kind of having it in a gallery when and kids have this complete innate response to the work, and it I always took that as being a sort of positive trigger, that I was doing something kind of right within the practice, and I guess that continued obviously then with children. But kind of I guess this program helped me kind of look back and sort of dig out this thing about colour, which I sort of found really interesting.
I mean, do you think it's important for your children to kind of I guess experience your art life, your practice? Is it important to for your own kids to do that?
It's sort of fundamental. I do all my drawing at home with them, so we draw simultaneously, and collage came out of that. So again, it would be kind of it's a similar thing whereby I create a collage and I'm sort of trying to save areas that I think have worth, and then Ava or Nancy will come along and they'll just blow away my collage with their direct kind of cuts and tears and their I guess their unself-conscious attitude towards any kind of medium that you put in front of them. So it's really important to riffing with them is kind of this really key thing, where they'll just help expose your limitations to do with age and preconceptions. So it's that kind of thing is a primary thing to do, like the drawing thing in the home.
I mean, it sounds to me like you're saying is that you kind of it's your job to sort of harness their naivety.
Yeah.
That there's a sort of naive energy which they have in their work, which you harness and then sort of mould to make it work. And I mean, I think
that's right.
I see your work, Wendy, very much as being doing that over the years of kind of using the naive eyes of the kids to make your work. And Samuel, would you agree with that?
Yeah. I mean, it's like you gain access to, a whole nother subject matter or eyes. And the only thing I would disagree with is the word naive.
Okay, all right, well.
Because they have such, they have their way of seeing, which is who they are at whatever time. And sometimes it's much more sophisticated, I think, than than how we see.
I mean, I guess the issue of access is pretty interesting as well. Because I mean, I think one thing Crispin and I have seen is that in the communities we've worked is that as a documentary photographer, you know, where the kind of the mantra is kind of gaining access and spending time to get to know people, to know situation to get access. One would never remotely get the kind of access that a child can get to their own lives and to their own families and to their own communities. And, you know, even just in kind of teaching, you know, we'll be in a pretty dodgy, rough street and you can go into a really kind of rough area, but with kids with cameras, people really open up and, you know, give a lot more than they would an adult photojournalist.
But I guess
they have a sense of composition, I think, that's determined by, you know, the spaces around them and their experiences.
I mean, to be a devil's advocate and to come back to this idea of the output, I guess, of the children and whether it's and it's art and how it's seen by people outside of the community or outside of the project. I mean, isn't there sometimes a view that I guess? How do you keep your artwork credible, I guess, is what I'm asking.
When it's
made by a child. Mm. I don't know if anyone wants to jump in on that.
I think you continue to question. I mean, I think it's healthy to spend time and continue to question and not rush into decisions. And even if it's 1 year, 2 years, 5 years down the line, you don't make those decisions if you don't feel comfortable with them. And that's something that I've agreed with in my own practice. I will do things when I feel comfortable with them, not when people want them from me.
You know, I also think it has something to do with intentionality. I know that there are a lot of, like we've said, there are a lot of projects around like this, especially in photography. And I think sometimes those projects are, people have this idea that if you give a camera to a child, that they have these innocent eyes and they're going to reveal to us things that we could never have revealed. But they don't, I think a lot of times they don't really work with the kids to really learn how to use that material and to understand what it is they really want to express. And it's more like the camera is taking the pictures, because there's a certain aesthetic you get with these kinds of cameras that you know, can be interesting. And sometimes if you look at a lot of these pictures together, they all kind of look the same. Mm-hmm. And I mean, I think you need to go into this, you know, with a certain intention. I don't know if that answers your question.
And whose intention with it? Are you talking about your intention or working with the children so they are taking this picture with intention? Is that?
Yeah, both of those things. That you have to have the intention that that's what you're doing, and then you allow them the power and control. You help them to get the power and the control. But that's part of the art, too, how you do that.
I wanted to ask Ian a question as well. As I know, being an artist is quite a lonely kind of existence, and I don't know if you found this, because I certainly find this with Mia's kind of coming into my life, it doesn't feel so lonely. It kind of, in some ways, helps me create work, or at least I feel there's someone else with me in the room, and how we bounce off each other. Do you have a similar experience?
Yeah, without a doubt, without a doubt. On the way across here, I was sort of almost thinking that what you have is you have this person who kind of physically kind of manages to help you critique your decision making by purely doing their own thing in their own way next to you. So your conversation is really at quite a sophisticated level visually, because lest we forget, we're talking about visual language when we're doing these things, and it's that's key, that it somehow, when you're riffing with them in this way, that the conversation's retained visually. It doesn't go out to be communicated back verbally. It's retained within its kind of core thing. And I think that's a really key thing about it. Yeah. And I mean, the only other thing I was thinking of was that with regards to sort of, is it art and is it not art? I mean, we can look back 100 years to Picasso with tribal masks, whereby he revealed the sophistication of these incredible African masks, which were before then probably kind of were considered unsophisticated in their ability to transfer information visually. So there's always a thing between what you do and how it becomes art that's kind of interesting, and it's good to be on the margins of that.
Yeah. I guess there's a slight kind of dilemma then, and maybe that's something which you were kind of hinting at. It's a question: was he revealing African art, or was he using it? You know, was he using it in a way to, you know, using his energy to make his own work?
I think it was both. Surely,
it was both. Yeah,
so
sure.
And both things. And was, yeah.
And I mean, perhaps, I mean, sometimes, you know, perhaps a negative view might be of all of us that we're using our children, to make art in a way which is they might not understand. Mm. You know, and I think that's something we all have to stand up to. Mm-hmm. I mean, would you agree, Wendy?
Yeah. No, I would. I mean, I think we can work on it and try to be as transparent and open and as we can, but you can't solve that, I don't think.
Yeah. Wendy, I'm very curious. Earlier, you mentioned that you've been back to some of the kids many years later, who you worked with. I mean, I'd be very, very curious to hear what kind of response they have now to thinking about their work then.
What did they think about those images that they made all those years ago?
And the process.
Yeah. No, it's really interesting. And it's, I'm still working on it. We're going to make a film about it. What I was really surprised at overall is how much they remembered and how much that was part of their childhood. When they thought about, you know, growing up, because I did work with those kids for some of them for 3-4 years, and so they were taking pictures all that time. So it really, you know, it became part of, you know, their going out and playing or whatever it was they're doing. But the level of detail of some of the conversations that we had, like remembering a day when we read a poem or and what was in the room, and I think the overwhelming feeling was this was a really opening. It opened up a lot of things for those kids, a lot of ways of looking at things and thinking about things.
This is also something that Alicia, you're going to have to broach with your daughter and the images that you've made of her and she of you.
Yes, and I think she's now 5 and a half, and it's just interesting the way she looks back from when she was younger, because I do remember when I was a child, probably about 4, that my first memories that aren't true memories do come from photographs. And but she seems to remember, because photographs are always around and she looks at them, but it seems to be building up her memory as well. And it is interesting, but I suppose it's not healthy to look too far in the future as well. And just enjoy the moment with your children, and the process you're making.
Yeah. I mean, what is the interesting thing with me and my older son, Eli, is that, I mean, part of my inspiration about doing this was when he was sick, about 6 or 7, I got given a digital camera. I was part of a project where we were given a camera, and I wasn't particularly interested in using the small digital camera, and I sort of gave it to him to use.
What did you used to shoot on?
I mean, I was shooting on film, but it was a small point-and-shoot camera, which didn't interest me a lot. But he began working on it, and I was just amazed by the photographs he did. And then he began doing this little project, partly inspired. I have a nephew who's become a photographer as well. My nephew inspired him to do a project like where he was documenting his life as a child, as he called it. he had that phase. He took some great pictures. We made a little slideshow, and then he sort of lost interest. You know, and he had a little phase, and he did some great stuff, and then he sort of moved on. And now he's sort of 12, and he's come into a little bit again recently, you know. But it isn't something which needs to, you know, something he did, and then kids always move on. But it really, I mean, it amazed me what it really opened my eyes to what kids could do.
But I mean, it also opens, gives an adult a way into a child's world and universe.
Yeah, I guess
that
so.
I mean, until you start working with them, it's I guess it's only in your memories. What do you find in that universe?
Mia does look a lot like me, and I suppose in certain respects within photography you can see or replay certain scenarios. Yeah. There's an image of her which is on the website, of her standing looking out to sea, and she's got a blue net, and when I actually printed that photograph, I just remembered the memory, and it was like deja vu. I didn't realise that I deliberately went to the beach and I deliberately bought the blue net for her. But then when I saw the photograph, the memory just come flooding back to me.
Quite moving with these kids from Kentucky, was seeing one of the boys that I worked with, Johnny, and I photographed him actually a lot, and then he photographed too, but and did lots of things. But we were looking at the pictures together, and I also recorded his story, that's another layer. But he started reading bits of his story and we were looking at the pictures, and all of a sudden he was sobbing. And, you know, he'd been fine the minute before. And and then we talked about it afterwards. But there is this memory there for him of how hard life was at that particular time.
I mean, whilst we're sort of discussing the sort of, I guess, the naive eye, this sort of freshness and energy that comes with working with children, there's a
a hard side to it. As you described, I mean, how do you deal with that, Wendy?
Well, I think that it's very helpful if at a certain point they're able to, the child is able to look at and talk about and express those things. I think share them. And also I think that what he didn't see that as hard as he sees it now, because he's not there. He's not living in it anymore. So, but obviously for me, I spent a lot of time with him and his family and, you know, helped out and became involved and et cetera. But I think it was, I think it's important for them to be able to express themselves.
I mean, I think often in kids' photographs, they can show things inadvertently of how difficult their life. You know, I think sometimes they may photograph. I mean, I certainly, with the kids I've worked with, you'll see something in the side of the frame which gives you, the water running down the walls, or just things which give you a sense of how messed up their lives may be, or how difficult the lives are, which hasn't been what they would have intended to photograph.
Sometimes there's for instance, some of Wendy's the groups that Wendy has worked with, they've created photographs the two friends that the story that she told earlier, the two friends and one photographing the other pretending as if he had killed him. I mean, it's some difficult, really really difficult issues that they can seem kind of like the flip side to this playful energy and sometimes you seem to be saying that you're tapping into.
Wendy,
yeah, but I also think that is playful, and it's a way of dealing with these fears playfully, which of course, you know, we know that kids have, and you know, to be able to have that opportunity can lessen the fear, or you know, be a way of working through some of those harder things.
We don't have much time right now, but so Ian, you were nodding with that.
Well, yeah, only because we have a fab time destroying things in the studio, wrecking things, doing stuff that, you know, is something that you can't do in another environment, and that's a really key thing, kind of to be able to kind of wreck things.
What were you going to say, Alicia?
I was just going to ask Wendy about children quite often are kind of taught to repress their emotions. And the one thing that I find interesting about your work is you give them the space to be who they fear to be in certain aspects, as well as who they want to be. And I think that there is a really important place for that, especially when children are seeming to, you know, not being able to have these lines of communications about how they really feel.
Yeah, well, I think that's true. I think it scares adults a lot, and I think that's a difficulty. And also, it's important to create a sort of safe environment so that so that they can feel supported in exploring those things.
Well, I guess we're going to have to wrap this discussion up. 1 hour is just too short. I'd like to say thank you to my guests in the studio, Ian Dawson. Thank you, Gideon Mandel, Alicia Hart, and to Wendy Ewald for joining us on the phone from New York. And I just want to tell you about next week's show. It's about the ideas surrounding community, and it's called The Big Society. Martina Mullaney, the founder of Enemies of Good Art, will be joined by a few guests.